Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. Do you like pets? Do they fill you with relaxation and a zen-like center to your existence? Well, if you like pets, and we all love pets, right? Except those of us who are allergic. If you like pets, call us with a question about your pet, whether it's a dog or it's a cat. We have a doctor here who will answer your questions, Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York, on the line to answer your pet questions. If you got one, call us, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. It's going to be fun. We'll be back after this pause. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Pets and Vets today, here to take your calls, is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell, and always a great guest on this program, always a popular guest. My earnest suggestion for you at home, if you have a question, call immediately. We get to as many calls as we can, but we always leave some irritated people who don't get through. So call now, 800-348-2551 if you have a question, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Ron Scharf, how are you, sir? That good, huh? Ah, there he is.
Hello. Hi, Ray. I'm missing a lot of your words, Ray. I want to say hello to everyone, but I don't know if you could hear me.
You're missing my words? Hello, can you hear
me?
Well,
some of them.
Can you hear me now? What? It's a new phone system. Zach, the engineer, just put his hands up, so I can tell it's going to be a fun hour. Can you hear me at this point, sir?
I can hear about 40 or 50% of your words.
Most people would take that as a win-win. All right, well, let's go.
That's a good thing, huh?
Let's go right to the phones and see if you can hear our callers. The number is 800-348-2551. Sandra in Adams, Massachusetts. Sandra, you're on. Let's hope for the best.
Okay.
Hello, Sandra. You see, Ron, what happened was we've been having some phone issues for the last week or so, and we put a new system in. And
I heard you've been having some phone issues, then I missed the next three or four words.
I could try reading you a few emails that came in while we're waiting for Sandra to get on the line here. Tell you what, Sandra, you call back. If you get through.
Hello?
Can you hear us?
I'm having the same problem that other gentleman is. I'm getting every other word, and then it goes blank.
Okay. Ron, can you hear Sandra?
I heard what she said.
Okay, good.
More than I hear what you say.
All right, Sandra, go ahead with your question.
Sandra should just run the show.
Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I want to tell you that I am 17 cats old.
Oh, boy.
In other words, I've lived with cats for many, many years. Well, that's a good way to look at your life, you know, in cat years.
I saw a button.
And two of them are
Sandra.
The living cats I'm living with right now. And the problem I have, which is making me crazy, is that one of my cats is peeing on the furniture.
Ouch.
And I cannot fix this. I can't figure it out. I believe I'm doing everything I should do. For two cats, I have four cat boxes. I am religious about cleaning cat boxes. I clean them every day. I have, in my 17 years of owning of cat life, run into cats that had issues that were physical. Neither one of my cats is sick. I don't think anybody has any bladder blockages. I have one male, one female. They're both 10 years old. But I got to figure out what I'm doing wrong. This is making me crazy. Right now, as I speak to you, I have my bedspread and the pad. I fortunately bought one of those pads to protect the mattress.
Yeah.
Sitting there with the Nature's Miracle product all over it.
Oh, boy.
You know, and hoping that it'll evaporate the odor. What am I doing wrong? Give me some advice.
All right, Ron, what do you think?
Okay, so first of all, I once saw a button recently that it said, I was normal three cats ago. So there's that. Now, this is the most common behavioral problem in cats, and I need some more information, Sandra. So first of all,
sure.
How old are they, and how long have they been together, and how long has the problem been going on?
They're both 10 years old. The male, Milton, has been with me since the day he was born. And Dusty, the young female, has been here about 2 years now. The two cats get along very well. In fact, Milton grooms her all the time. I had this problem briefly last year for a short while when I was very, very sick and other people were taking care of my animals, and I thought that might have caused it. But I'm fine now, and I'm back in their life, and I'm clean. Like I said, I'm doing everything I should, cleaning cat boxes every single day. So the problem started, somebody peed on the couch a couple of weeks ago, and then somebody else peed on the bed twice.
Oh, boy.
It's awful.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay. Okay, so, Sandra, it's a very complicated issue, and I'm never words that anyone wants to hear, because there is a connection between the brain and the bladder. So, in other words, many cats, I think I remember hearing up to 60% of cats with what is nowadays called feline lower urinary tract disease have what is called feline interstitial cystitis, meaning they have a physical problem that's giving them a UTI, or signs of a lower urinary tract problem, I should say. And this is something that I've heard is an entity in women, that the interstitial cystitis causes spasms, and it causes these great urges to go. And in cats, I think that the brain bladder connection is that stress is involved. So something is stressing out one of the cats, and it's sounding like you don't even know which one.
Hmm. No, there's no way to know.
Okay. So
they don't leave their calling card.
Okay. Your due diligence, first of all, Sandra, is to do your analyses. Have you done those?
No.
Okay.
We could do that. I must say, with the pandemic going on, I can't get a regular vet visit anymore, but I can at least drop them off at the vet, and they'll take a look at them, and then I have to go pick them up later.
Really? Not while you wait in the parking lot?
Well, yeah, I can wait in the parking lot, but if they have to do anything more, I'd have to.
Right.
Yeah. But I can't be there with them and learn anything about it. But they would do an ordinary urinalysis just to see what's going on with both of them.
Yes, that's the first place you start.
Okay.
Now, depending upon what the urinalysis shows, you may or may not need to take an x-ray to make sure there's no stone.
I've been through that issue so many times with other cats in my many, many years of owning them that I'm pretty certain that there's nobody has any bladder stones this time. They don't have any of the other symptoms.
You may be certain.
Fair enough.
But you may be wrong. And then what you're doing is you're going down the direction of not being a stone, and then what if it turns out that there is, or a beginning?
Right. Okay. One of my cats died last year because he had stones.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
They operated on him, but he never made it through. So
that's
I know what you mean. That can be very scary.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Me too.
Well,
me too.
Ron, if you don't mind, maybe 30 more seconds of advice, and then we have to take a quick break
30 seconds.
Okay,
here's
fair enough.
You already have enough litter boxes.
Okay.
You want to use different kinds of litters in case there's a preference. You want to clean it every day like you're doing. You want to use Feel Away, which is a pheromone. But you got to figure out which cat it is, and you got to do the urinalyses on both. That is the place to start. And then the Feel Away might help. And then you might want to separate
them
just to
see if
it makes
any
difference.
What's that called?
Feel Away.
I don't know what you're saying. Feel Away?
F as in Frank, E-L-I-W-A-Y.
Okay.
Okay.
My vet will know what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
you can get it yourself.
I'll find out.
All right, great. Sandra, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. The numbers. Can you hear me now, Ron?
That is very good. Unfortunately, I can hear everything you're saying.
That's very nice of you. Our number is 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets Today with Ron Scharf. We'll be back. Box Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. Pets and Vets and a new phone system, and Dr. Ron Scharf is here. Can you hear me, sir?
Perfect.
Oh, my gosh. This is great. While you can hear me, let's read two or three emails, and then we'll quickly jump back on the phones. This one is from Heather and Lee. And Heather says, my cat is on the first six-week stint of an elimination diet to troubleshoot her allergy, which is the typical itching, scratching, licking in between paws, excessive grooming. What shall I expect to find from her on this diet? What if her allergy gets worse on the six-week trial? And when the 6 weeks is up, what then? Keep her on that same food indefinitely? She likes it. I'm not concerned about that. She likes anything that is food. So Heather has some questions about this elimination diet. Maybe we can do a quick précis on that.
Yes. So I'll even be stricter than 6 weeks. I'll tell people often 2 to 3 months on the elimination diet because there's a few animals with food allergies that may not get better in 6 weeks. Do you continue it? Not necessarily. If the hypoallergenic diet is successful, then what you could do is diet trials. Try this food for a week or two, and then see how she does. Put it on a piece of paper, good or bad, and then try the next food. And you could do dietary trials, but first you got to get on top of the problem. If there's an itch while she's on the elimination diet, there are medications that you could use to calm that itch down.
Okay.
But there is also something called immunotherapy, which is allergy shots. However, I would not recommend that if it's only a food allergy. However, if some animals with a food allergy may also have allergies to stuff in the air.
Yeah.
So that's where the immunotherapy would come in. But if we know for sure it's only food, then, yeah, get them right, get the cat right, and then go from there as far as trying other foods.
Okay, this one is from Patty. And Patty says, our 5-year-old cat frequently vomits after eating her food. We feed her soft food in the morning, hard food in the evening. Doesn't happen every time, but several times a week. Is there something different we should try? And that's from Patty.
Yes, small amounts of food.
Ah.
So what a lot of cats do, it's very common, is they eat too much too quickly. Something in their earlier days, maybe they were a rescue, maybe they were the runt of the litter, maybe they swore one day to never go hungry again.
No.
And so whenever they get fed, they carry that out by attacking the food, eating it too quickly, and then usually if this is what it is, what I call a pigging out syndrome in cats, you'll see they'll be vomiting up chewed up but undigested food 5 or 10 minutes after they eat.
Right.
Now, if this is hours later, it's not pigging out syndrome. It's something else.
Okay.
So if you play by the odds, you start them on a teaspoon or two at a time. You do that for a few days, you know, every 2 to 3 hours to make sure they're not vomiting. And then you go to 3 teaspoons, and then you go to 5, and then you go to 7. You know, so you're finding out over the course of a week or two what amount will be enough to allow them to puke after eating too quickly, and then you know from there if it's, you know, 7
yeah.
teaspoons is making a vomit. Now you go back to 5 or 6, and everything should be fine.
All right, this last email here from Joyce in Buskirk, New York. I recently noticed that my soon-to-be 6-year-old lab's teeth look like there's a film on them. The back teeth look the worst. Should I try to brush them? Does he need professional cleaning? What does that involve? Is it a vet procedure or a grooming service? And that is from Joyce in Buskirk.
Well, Joyce, that is a great question. So the film is, yes, that the dog needs a cleaning, and your brushing the teeth is a great idea, but as with us, brushing the dog's teeth will not get off the tartar and calculus that's already there, okay? The brushing the teeth, ideally daily, would slow down future accumulation, but even that won't stop it because look at us. We're brushing every day twice a day if we're good with flossing, and still recommend that we have our teeth cleaned twice a year.
Yeah.
So even if you are brushing the teeth, which I totally recommend, I would say yes, a professional cleaning, which is a veterinary procedure requiring anesthesia. Do not believe those who say that they can clean your animal's teeth without anesthesia. They are wrong.
Okay.
Because where the real action is, where the damage happens, is under the gum line, which no awake animal would let any person get under there. That's where the bad bacteria that cause periodontal disease reside,
yeah.
And they are inaccessible on an awake or even a sedated but non-anesthetized animal.
Can you actually floss a dog without losing fingers?
There are plenty of dogs that are nice enough. I don't know anyone that's tried. But I got a great dog. You know, I'm bringing up a, you know, he's 9 months old, yeah. And I think he let me get away with it.
Okay.
There are dogs that would let you get away, but I don't think I've ever heard of anyone doing it.
Okay, so doggy floss is not a thing. Let's go back to the phones.
Not a thing.
Carolyn in Poughkeepsie, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a cat. My friend and I have a cat who apparently was on the road, adopted by a neighbor who then died a couple years later. And he was always, you know, relatively slim. We had him for 3 years. We rescued him when our neighbor died. And he's been on a medication called methimazole. Mm-hmm. For a hyperactive, I believe, thyroid. He's 5 milligrams. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
A day.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that because he was very thin. He was losing weight. Well, mm-hmm. We've had him for 3 years, and about maybe 4 or 5 months ago, he started losing weight again. He's a very happy cat. He eats really well. He drinks really well. He's really affectionate. He spends a lot of time outdoors, but he's inside every night. He's in and out. And we had the thyroid rechecked. So everything's fine there, and the vet has offered to have us come back for $60 and do another blood, set of blood tests. And I've been thinking about taking him to a holistic vet. We can't figure out what's wrong, I suppose, without doing further testing. But we're stymied. You have suggestions?
Hmm.
Yes. So it's an intriguing thing. If the cat's starting to lose weight, it suggests, Carolyn, that he or she has outgrown her 5 milligram per day dose. Because
we had that retested, and he said the results were right.
Hmm.
Well, that's why it's an intriguing question, because if we know for sure that the thyroid is correct, which I'm not sure if we do know that, because you offered another test for $60, and I don't know what these tests are called.
Another gamut of blood tests. That's not the
thyroid sometimes,
in particular.
Here's
apparently.
The thing. Since you want to get down into the weeds, okay, the screening test for thyroid condition is called a total T4, okay? T4 is the thyroid level in the bloodstream, not all of which is active, okay? The active one, you can do another more expensive test. But the problem is that the T4, the screening test, could be influenced by other sicknesses in the body. So if you have, say, a kidney problem or a liver problem or whatever, it could have an effect to lower the thyroid level. So a cat's who is hyperthyroid or underregulated with their hyperthyroidism may have a normal number because of a different illness that is called extrathyroidal. It's outside the thyroid, but having an effect on the thyroid. So another test called a free T4, F-R-E-E,
yep.
A free T4 is less influenced by non-thyroidal factors. And the best one to do is called a free T4 by ED, equilibrium dialysis. So that might be the test that your vet offered to do. $60 doesn't sound too bad.
Right.
A free T4 by equilibrium dialysis is much more accurate than a total T4. And if it shows that the cat's hyperthyroid, then I would bet that something else in the cat's body is causing that total T4 to look normal when it's really too high in actuality. Does that make sense?
Carolyn, thanks so much for the call. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. Pets at Vets today. Josh is in Sheffield. Josh, go ahead.
I'm calling for my girlfriend, Wendy. She wanted to know at what point would her about 9-month pit bull show if she was pregnant. The dog got out during the weather storm that we had about 2 weeks ago.
Hmm.
And when I was the one that got the dog back in, it was there with her litter mate, which it was obvious that he was excited extremely, but it wasn't like they were locked.
Okay.
Well, that's a good thing if they weren't locked. It doesn't guarantee anything, as you know, Josh. But In terms of the earliest way that you can find out, by palpation, just feeling the girl, okay? At 2 to 3 weeks, if she's cooperative and does not have a tense body wall, you know, some dogs, they come in, they're nervous, and they tense up their body wall. So if she comes in without a tense body wall, you can feel the embryo starting at 3 weeks.
Huh.
Now, if you wait a week or two later, there's too much going on for you to know, okay? And it is hard to tell at a month what you could have had an easier time at 2.5 to 3 weeks, okay? So the first thing would be take her in 2.5 weeks after they had an encounter, okay? The next thing would be I think x-rays would show fetal skeletons at 45 days, if I recall correctly. An ultrasound might show something a few days earlier. Hmm. So that's what you're looking at, you know, 2.5 weeks, whatever, 18 days, or 40 or 45 days.
Okay. Hey, Josh, good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf, our guest today on Pets and Vets. Laura in Lee. Hello, Laura.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
You betcha.
Sure can.
Great. Okay. So I have a really great dog. He's a one-year-old golden doodle. And I have two questions about it. One is he's got really super thick fur. He got a hot spot that was raw and oozing. We put him on antibiotics, which cleared it up. But what I don't know is how to prevent that from happening. We do get him groomed, and we keep his hair short.
Hmm.
That's my first question.
Okay.
Good. Okay. Should we answer that one?
Why not?
Or do you want to throw the second one at us? Okay. So here's the thing about a hot spot, Laura. There are many, many potential causes for a hot spot. So much so that I remember when I was in vet school, which was many, many years ago, is that the nerd book, we used to call it a nerd book, it's a little tiny three-ring binder that you carry in your pocket, had a page devoted to all the potential things that can cause a hot spot, and there was like almost upwards of 20 different possibilities. And in those possibilities, high on the list would be allergies and parasites. Parasites specifically fleas, though other ones can do it too. So, you know, there are other ones. There's ear infections, you know, stuff that's itchy, stuff that makes the dog try to satisfy an itch. And I say that those are the top three, the allergies, and this is a big summer allergy season,
mm-hmm.
or parasites. And then number three, in my experience, would be ear infections. A lot of ear infections, though, are also secondary to allergies because allergies cause an itch, and the itch could show up on any part of the body it feels like. And many, many, many dogs with allergies, the itch shows up in the ears.
Mm.
And so they go at their ears enough, they shake their head, they scratch their ears, and they set up a great scene for a secondary bacterial infection. So the antibiotics helping the hotspot is a little intriguing because I could feel that they would be good for a secondary infection, but whatever is causing the itch in the first place is not necessarily being addressed by just an antibiotic. So I don't know. But like I say, I think I came up with 17 or 19 different possible causes, but those are the top three.
Okay. And what's the second part, Laura?
Just a really quick question. So when we hike with him, we have this experience of our dog is on a leash. Another person is hiking with their dog. Their dog comes very aggressively charging at our dog. And our dog is a really mild-mannered dog. And I'm like screaming at the dog and trying to kick the dog to keep the dog from attacking my dog.
Yeah.
It's very scary, and I find that sometimes dog owners aren't really taking responsibility for their dogs. This dog owner did nothing. And I'm wondering what I can do to protect my dog if you would recommend a bear spray, or if there's something that you might recommend in case that happens again.
Okay, Dr. Scharf.
Okay, that's a great question. I've noticed that too. A lot of people think that their dog is under their total control, and that is almost never the case, okay? Because dogs are very excited about seeing other dogs. And there are some dogs that are so well-trained that they would not charge, But I think the majority dogs, in my mind, hiking type dogs would charge. I don't think that that's unusual. So the spray is a great idea because, you know, otherwise, you know, you start to think about your walking stick or something. Like, you know, like
right.
you need something that's going to get the charging dog's attention. And the walking stick or, you know, whatever is got its risks because you could hurt me. And so it's more drama and it's more potential risk. So, yeah, if you can get a spray, if you can get some kind of thing which is not toxic, well, anything could be toxic, I guess, potentially if it gets into the eyes.
Right.
So what the single best spray would be is hard to say, but in almost a way, if it does not get in the eyes, it doesn't get the dog's attention.
Yeah.
So the big question is, what spray that's not harmful for eyes would get the dog's attention and make them think twice about charging? And that's a tough one. You know, maybe a sound, maybe like one of these ultrasonic things that a dog can hear and we can't.
Interesting.
Would be something. I've never really thought about that, Laura, but that's a great question. I mean, I hike and I bring a dog and I have my dog on a leash, but I've never been in as challenging a situation as you've been. So what personally, what I would do, I literally, you know, I would use a walking stick and jab. You know, I wouldn't personally
whack.
Hit the
right.
dog, but I would use it as a, like a lance, you know, like a non-pointed
yeah.
lance kind of thing to just say, wait a minute, you better not approach that dog because it might hurt. And it's a very delicate situation because you don't want to hurt that dog, but you need to get their attention. And something that is not convincing will not work. And if it is convincing, it may be potentially harmful. So it's a risky situation.
Well, Laura, thank you very much for that one. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. One email here before we get to the break, and then we'll hit a couple of more emails and then back to the phones. This one's from Mike in Rexford. Can dogs get COVID?
Well, we found that there have been some dogs that have tested positive for COVID, but we don't know for sure that they could get sick. I have not personally heard of dogs getting sick from COVID. Now, cats might be another story, but that's not in the question.
Really? Well, no, I'll ask the question. Do cats get sick from COVID?
Yes. I think that there are a handful of cases, literally, that I know of in the world. Okay?
Any around here?
No, there were zoo animals, there were zoo cats, and maybe a couple of domestic cats.
Very interesting.
Not here. Not that I know of in this country, though.
Okay.
But I have not read the most recent in the last month or two. I have not read personally any news about domestic cats getting sick in this country.
All right, let's take a quick break. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's Pets and Vets. The home stretch is coming up. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC, Pets and Vets with Dr. Ron Scharf. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551 is the number. And Dr. Scharf, we have three email messages here, and we'll try to take them quickly and get back to the phones. As always, the phone lines are completely loaded. This one is from Christina. Christina says, my family is interested in getting a new family dog in the next few years. Our kids will be 10 and 7 at that point. We're deciding between a Cavalier King Charles and a Cocker Spaniel. Is one breed generally healthier or have a better temperament than the other? We can't decide. And that's from Christina.
Okay. So, Christina, if the choice is between a Cavalier and a... did you say Cocker? Did she say a Cocker?
Yep.
Spaniel?
Cocker Spaniel.
Okay. So, they could... All of them have their own personalities, but in my experience, as a generalization, that calves have a more placid disposition than cockers, okay?
Okay.
However, my concern as a veterinarian is that Cavaliers can get a heart problem. Doesn't mean all of them do, but a good amount of them do. So, you know, if the personality is the most important thing, yeah, Cavalier King Charles. This is not to disparage Cocker Spaniels.
Right.
There are plenty of Cockers that are perfect and great and have great personalities. But I just happen to, my own personal experience with the calves is that they're, just about all of them, very placid. It's that heart thing that bothers me. So what's the likelihood of a Cavalier getting the heart problem? I don't know. It might be as high as 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 or all something right. like that. So that's a high possibility, and that's the thing that would get me. Personally, if I was making the same choice, and those are the two to choose from, it is the heart that might make me personally choose the Cocker Spaniel.
Okay.
Because plenty of them are nice. You know, it's not that they're not nice.
All right. So. This one is from somebody in Connecticut, and this person writes, took in a feral cat 2 years ago, all fixed up, very happy, living with us and our three dogs. The cat is 2. Dogs are about 10 and 20 pounds and over 10 years old. They get along, but the cat tries to walk over and rub up against them like they do with humans. The dogs just lean out of the way and look annoyed. Will they ever like it, or is this a cat that does not understand the dog world does not understand?
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think, will they ever get to like it? No, they'll get to tolerate it and not be as annoyed as they were in the first place because it is a behavior that a dog does not understand.
Right.
And will the cat ever stop doing it? No, because it's a it's to not like it is a behavior that the cat doesn't understand. They just do what they want.
Yeah.
So I don't think that there's any danger since none of the dogs are doing anything other than leaning away.
Right.
But I think that that's just what cats do. I mean, they leave their scent.
Yeah.
And it's also an expression of sentiment. It's also, you know, expression of I like you.
Yeah.
So I think it's a benign behavior on both of their parts, and I wouldn't worry about it.
Fair enough. All right, last email, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Doreen, and Doreen writes, hi, about that call about the uncontrolled dog, a long-range water gun, swimming pool toy.
Oh, that's
works.
A good idea.
That
yeah.
sounds like a good idea.
That's a fine idea. If it's got to be, I mean, it's got to be a pump-action water gun to get, you know, otherwise, you know, a lot of dogs like water.
Right.
So it's got to have some convincingness to it, but I think that that's a great idea. I should have thought of that myself.
All right, back to the phones we go, and let's go to Charlene in Schenectady. Charlene.
Yes, I just recently had a cat that was diagnosed with a UTI, and he was injected with Covenia. And since then, I've heard very bad reviews. Since then, I've heard very bad reviews about it. And within the 24 hours of him having it, he got very lethargic and refused to eat and refuses to drink. Should I be concerned or should I give it another 24 hours to see if he perks up? And is there anything that I can give him to get fluids pushing in him so he can regain some of his energy?
Okay, so we have a urinary tract infection. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And how old are we?
He's a 14-year-old male indoor cat.
Okay. Okay. And I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name?
Charlene.
My name is Charlene.
Charlene, thank you. So, Charlene, I love that stuff, and people love that stuff. Cat people really love that stuff because no one likes to have to medicate their cat orally. So this is personally the first time. I don't know if personally I've used a lot of that stuff. It's a great product. It's an antibiotic. It's broad spectrum. It lasts 2 weeks. And I don't know that I've ever encountered an animal that got sick from the convenience. So you said that within 36 hours he got lethargic?
First 24 hours of him being on it, he got very lethargic. He actually decreased from the time that I brought him in with the UTI until the following day. He just lacked all energy. He refuses to, you know, come out of his bed. He won't eat, drink. I got a little bit of boiled chicken into him this morning, but he hasn't had any water in over 2 days.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's something I would be concerned about, Charlene. And I would have you told your vet?
Last night, because I had to bring him to the late night hospital. And I called him up last night. They told me to give it another 24 hours and see if, you know, if he had any changes since then. In the meantime, I would like to try to get some water in him. So I was thinking maybe a chicken broth or maybe pumpkin.
Yeah, those sound fine. The pumpkin is more fiber than anything else. Chicken broth sounds great. But I'm concerned about the lethargy, because what if it's, whether it's the convenia or something that's not convenia related, you know, great lethargy for 24 to 48 hours and not eating is significant, you know? So I think it's a good idea to wait 24 hours. So now that it's been most of 24 hours since that emergency vet told you, did you say that he was a little better?
Yes, he did get out of the bed this morning. He got a couple of bites of boiled chicken in him. He seemed to perk up a little bit, but not much.
Okay.
He did get to pee a little bit. He had a, he went to the kitty litter a couple of times, pulled small squirts out. I don't see any blood in there, and they had told me that they checked his kidney values, and his kidney values showed that he had the kidney disease, but it, the values were within normal limits.
Okay.
Why would he? Why would the blood test show that he has kidney disease, but they were normal in normal limits?
They seen kidney stone.
I'm sorry.
I guess they had seen a kidney stone.
Okay.
Oh, they took an X-ray, you mean, or they did a urinalysis?
They did a urinalysis, and I know they did an ultrasound.
Ah, good. Very good. The stone is a concern because a male cat can get blocked, Charlene. And that's a major emergency.
All right. Let's wrap this one up. You have any final thoughts for Charlene, doctor? Then we'll move on to the next one.
Well, I just wonder, you know, the vet that did the ultrasound would know that male cats can get blocked from a stone.
Yeah.
Unless the stone was in the kidneys, in which it could still be a problem, but not the emergency problem that I just mentioned.
Okay.
I was thinking
they sent me home with the kidney, or, you know, just to happen.
Yeah, we're gonna have to let this one go, Charlene. Your connection's very bad.
I'm
really sorry about that, but we're gonna have to move on. And let's go now to Paula in Gloversville. Paula.
Yes. Hi. Let me take you off speaker.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Let me get you.
Okay.
My dog is 13 and a half. She was diagnosed with a heart murmur about a year ago. I took her to the to be groomed, and they wouldn't groom her because she was diagnosed with stage 3 out of 6.
Oh.
I don't know what that means.
I can tell you what that means. Keep going.
Okay. And my vet didn't recommend anything for her. Is there a medication she should be on, or what should I be doing about this?
So what you should be doing, the ideal, would be to find out why there is a murmur. Now, there are plenty of animals with a grade 3 out of 6. 6 is the worst. I mean, you can pretty much hear it without a stethoscope. Okay, there are a few murmurs that I've heard that are grade 6. Okay, they do exist, though. But what you need to do, the approach to a heart murmur, is to, first of all, do a blood pressure. Because high blood pressure, you don't know the symptoms. You can't look at someone and know that they have high blood pressure. So there's blood pressure medication, number one. But to get a specific diagnosis is really good, because many things can cause a heart murmur. Now, the most common thing in dogs, and I don't know if you have your 13-and-a-half-year-old is small or big, but I assume if it's 13-and-a-half, it's small dog. The most common thing in a small dog would be a mitral valve problem. Okay, So whatever it is, it may indicate that other medications are needed. If the heart's beating too fast because its function is compromised and it's trying to compensate, then there is a beta blocker or other medications that could be used. I think that the best thing would be a cardiologist, because they're the experts. They're the they're the specialists, and they got the best technology, too.
Yeah.
So not only do they have the most experience compared to a general practitioner, but they got the best ultrasound, and they could get a specific diagnosis, which would answer your question totally. But a general practitioner could do the blood pressure. Also, a general practitioner can do two other things. So I tell people, if they don't want to go to a specialist, then the next thing that I would do is not only the blood pressure, but there I would do a chest x-ray, because sometimes you'll see that the heart is enlarged and what the shape is. And the third thing is a blood test called a BNP. B as in boy, N as in Nancy, P as in Peter. So the BNP will usually be elevated in an animal whose heart is having trouble. Now, no blood test is perfect, so sometimes you could have a false negative or a false positive, but short of a cardiologist, those are the three things that I recommend. Now, if you are going to a cardiologist, I don't think I'd bother with the BNP, because that could be wrong more than the cardiologist's echocardiogram could be wrong.
All right, Paula, thank you so much for the call. Over to Tom in Gardner, Massachusetts. Tom.
Yes, earlier, doctor, you said that, you know, most people don't want to, you know, inject orally, you know, to a cat or a dog through the mouth. What else can we do? You know, we're trying with a syringe, but our little six-month-old Maine Coon cat is pretty feisty.
Yeah.
So we tried with a blanket, you know, holding the cat with a blanket, and and we were somewhat successful. But would you recommend anything else?
Yes. There are several tricks that you could do, Tom, and that we do. And the most common would be to bury the pill in something that the cat likes to eat, okay? And there's even a product made for it called Pill Pockets that some cats fall for, but a lot don't, okay? but the Pill Pockets like this doughy thing that you jam the pill into, and sometimes you can get away with it. But to pill a cat does require some ingenuity. And so what you sometimes can do is put it into a glob of peanut butter or cream cheese or tuna and hope that it masks the taste of the pill. Some pills are very bitter and some aren't. So oftentimes you can get away with burying it in the cream cheese or the peanut butter or whatever happens to please the cat the most. Another thing you could do, Tom, is get the medication compounded into either a liquid that has a flavor. So these compounding pharmacies will have a ton of different flavors. They'll usually, for a cat, start with what they call a triple fish flavor. But at least the compounding pharmacy that I work with, I'll give them a plug, Fallon's down the road. They're amazing. And if the one flavor doesn't do the job, the last I heard, they would try another flavor without charging you.
Okay.
Don't know if that's still their policy, so I don't want to speak for them.
Right, you don't want to do that.
The next thing, other than the flavored liquid, would be that there are other pharmacies around the country that can compound medications into a pill that tastes good.
Okay.
But I forgot to mention something else that you can get at Fallon's, and that is a transdermal formulation.
Right.
So that means something that you could just put a little dab on a relatively hairless area of the cat, which is usually either in front of the ear or on the ear, you know, the flat part that sticks up.
Yeah.
You need to wear a glove because otherwise it'll go through your own skin. And there are many medications, Tom, that will lend themselves to the transdermal, not all medications, but there's a whole lot of options right there that one way or another, you can get the medication to the cat. But I don't want to miss the most direct method is just pilling the cat. Now, the pilling the cat either with a finger or what's called a pill gun.
A pill gun.
Okay? A pill gun is like a little... it's like a plastic syringe, but it doesn't have a needle on it.
Right.
What it does is it has a tip that will accommodate the pill, and then it has a rod inside that syringe that is in the extended position when you put the pill in the pill gun, and then you jab it with your thumb, so it gives it a big push.
Okay.
Fast. So
that sounds terrifying.
So if you position that pill gun into the mouth, You got to be in the middle of the tongue, and then if you push that pill gun, or if you're doing it manually with yourself. Some cats will let you get away with opening their mouth. What I do is I put my – I'm a right-handed person, so with my left hand, I put my hand over their head.
Yeah.
And my middle finger and thumb are positioned at their cheeks. So when I pull down their chin with my right finger,
right.
I could squeeze their cheeks in, keeps their mouth open, nose up to the sky, throw the pill as far back, but it's got to be in the middle of the tongue. And if it's in the back of the tongue, you may not even need to push it in. But that's what I'll often do with a cooperative nice cat, is push it down the throat with my finger. That way I can walk away immediately. If you just drop it to the back of the tongue and don't push it in, you got to keep the mouth closed and get them to try to swallow by blowing into their nose or stroking their throat or something or other. Yeah. So it takes a little longer.
Have you ever seen Clockwork Orange, Dr. Scharf?
Oh, I have.
Yeah,
I have.
Some terrifying moments in that as well. Well, unfortunately, we're about out of time here on the program. But how do people find out more about the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna?
So our email, or I should say our website, is animalhospitalniskayuna.com.
Okay. Animalhospitalniskayuna.com.
Yes. And the phone number is a 518-785-9731.
Okay.
And the email is ahniskayuna@gmail.com.
Just a final thought here. Do they sell left-handed pill guns?
They are ambidextrous, Ray.
Okay. All right. And what about semi-automatics while we're at it?
That would be dangerous, Ray.
Okay. Well, Ron, let's leave it on that terrifying note. It's so nice to have you back on the program.
Likewise.
Ron Scharf, we'll talk to you soon, my friend. Support comes from the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. Paul Smith's College, the College of the Adirondacks, offering degrees in management, natural sciences, hospitality, forestry, psychology, culinary arts, and more. Paul Smith's College, it's about the experience, paulsmiths.edu. At Mother Earth Storehouse, open 7 days, working to help keep our communities safe and supplied with EDC goods and services, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and all-natural foods since 1978. MotherEarthStorehouse.com. Well, once again, thanks to Dr. Ron Scharf for scaring the daylights out of me with his vivid description of the pill gun. Dr. Scharf will be back with us at some point. And meantime, I hope you all have pleasant dreams tonight. Thanks again for joining us. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Phones answered by Jordan Yuxall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's astronomy. Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson, assuming the phones cooperate. And, at this point, we'll just see what happens. We'll just spin the wheel. We'll roll the dice. Hope everything works. Maybe we'll do a show. Maybe I'll go to OTB. Right now, stand by for 51%.